Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. R. John Hansman, who is a professor in the Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics at MIT, where he's head of the Humans and Automation Division. He's also director of the International Center for Air Transportation, and his current research interests focus on advanced cockpit information systems, including flight management systems, air ground data link, electronic charting, advanced alerting systems, and flight crew situational awareness. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. R. John Hansman.
Happy to be here.
And I suppose the evidence has led people to understand that this is not the plane didn't crash over the, on its way to Thailand. It comes from the fact that the ACARS, the Aircraft Communications Addressing and Reporting System, was turned off before the last communication from the cockpit, and subsequently, even though these radar tracks from the Malaysian military were available back last Wednesday, it's taken the authorities in Malaysia some time to come to this conclusion. Now they appear to be looking into the possibility of a land route over Asia heading up towards Kazakhstan. What's your latest understanding of where the search is focused now?
So, they're searching both to the north and to the south, and I can explain that in a minute why they're doing that. But the Malaysians have actually shifted their timeline a little bit. So it turns out that the last signal from the ACARS system was before the last radio communication, but it was not expected to give another update or signal until after the communication. So they don't really know exactly when the ACARS went down. And that actually sort of changes a little bit of the assumptions of what might happen. With regard to the search area, there was a satellite communication device still operating on the airplane. It wasn't sending any information, but it was getting pings, just like your cell phone will ping the tower occasionally to know its location. So from the satellite pings, they know the distance the airplane was from the satellite. That ends up drawing an arc on the Earth. So there's one part of that arc is to the north. That's up towards Kazakhstan and in Central Asia. And then the southern part of that arc goes through the Indian Ocean down by Australia. We don't really know. All that we know is that the airplane was on that arc about 7.5 hours after takeoff. But we don't know where at all it is on there, so the search area is still quite vast.
So it could have been on either of the two arcs, the one that went south into the Indian Ocean and the one went north into Central Asia.
That's right. They've only terminated the arcs to the west because the airplane didn't have enough fuel to go that any further than that. And I presume the reason why they have they don't have the arc in the middle is because they've already sort of searched that area with the radar data they had access to.
So one of the things that I find queasy about this whole story is the fact that these passengers, the fate of them is still unknown, and of course they have next of kin, and you know one doesn't want to get into ghoulish speculation, but it does appear that the first act once the plane was diverted was to fly up above its rated ceiling to 45,000 feet. And some have speculated that that was to get longer range, and others have speculated that that was a way to asphyxiate the passengers, thus neutralizing them. What do you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't put a lot of credibility in the reports of the altitude. It turns out that one of the systems that was shut down on the airplane, the transponder, is the one that gives accurate altitude reports of the airplane. So the way they were inferring altitude were from military radars that did not have a particularly good look angle on the airplane and didn't. So I don't think that the measurements of altitude were very precise. However, if they are correct, it's not a huge deal from a pressurization standpoint to go up to 45,000 feet. I doubt that that was the cause, and the airplane is very, very, very difficult to fly at 45,000 feet. So the speed difference between where you get trouble due to supersonic effects and where you have trouble due to stall is very small. We actually call that the coffin corner. So I'm not sure it went up that high, and even if it did, I don't think it was done intentionally to try to disable the passengers.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. R. John Hansman, who's a professor in the Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics at MIT, where he's head of the Humans and Automation Division. He's also director of the International Center for Air Transportation, and his current research focuses on advanced cockpit information systems, including flight management systems, air-ground data links, electronic charting, advanced alerting systems, and flight crew situational awareness. The other scenario, of course, that is being suggested here is that somehow the plane got into the radar shadow of Singapore Airlines Flight 68 and was able to go follow it all the way up into Central Asia, across India, where there's, of course, a lot of military radar, particularly when you get close to India and Pakistan and China. And that's explaining why there was no radar detection. That seems like a pretty elaborate, if not far-fetched, theory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're into a huge speculation, whatever. It is possible to get to fly formation with an airplane. It's actually not all that difficult. Commercial airplanes fly very steady flight paths. So it was theoretically possible that you could have linked up with another airplane and then sort of track them. The military radars would tend to, if you were close enough, would tend to see you as a as one target, basically the targets would merge. And if you were coming from behind, the other airplane wouldn't necessarily know you were there. So, again, it's theoretically possible. I don't think we have any evidence at all that supports it.
So the other theory that it appears that the Malaysian authorities are working on, Dr. John Hansman, is the idea that one or more of the flight crew, the pilot, co-pilot, or the engineer, was somehow involved in financial or professional difficulties, and this is an elaborate form of suicide in order to collect insurance for next of kin. And that's been attributed to the possibility that it flew off into the Indian Ocean where it would never be found again. What's your understanding of that theory?
Well, I don't have any evidence. I mean, we have had cases in the past where there have been intentional suicides on the part of crew. So, you know, in any case like this, particularly where there's a suspicion of an intentional diversion, they are appropriately doing investigations on everybody on the airplane to try to understand anybody who would have a motive. So I don't have any specific evidence or data on motive there.
So just in terms of this continuing mystery then, is this something that I spoke yesterday to David Gleave in the UK who has actually dealt with a pilot suicide in order to collect insurance. That was, and of course, as we just mentioned, that's a theory that the Malaysian authorities are pursuing. But has there ever been an incident where a plane has and its passengers have been taken, you know, theft for ransom, which is the other theory that's out there?
There was a famous case in the U.S. With a hijacker, D.V. Cooper, who hijacked the airplane 727, held it for ransom, got the ransom, and also got a parachute, had the pilots take off and fly and parachute it out of the airplane and has never been heard from again. So it has happened in the past, rarely successfully.
Well, in terms of that theory, of course, speculation involves the Uyghurs, who are in a war against China, and that the fact that the pilots were Muslim and perhaps there was one Uyghur aboard, but apparently nobody seems to think he was any kind of a radical. But that's the theory. And if that were the case, and if they're in the midst of how would you hide a plane of this size? There's apparently somebody's come up with a number about the 600 possible landing sites in this, you know, projected flight path heading north. But nevertheless, it would seem to me that it would be pretty hard to hide a plane of that size.
Yeah, no, I think it's unlikely. I mean, you need a runway that's long enough to handle the airplane. Typically about 5,000 feet would probably be about the smallest they could get it into. And I think that there are about 500 airports in the entire range of the airplane so that you can go and look at those. But you would need to be able to get it on the ground. without anybody noticing, which is very difficult, particularly if it's an airport that's not normally used. You would then have to have a building big enough, or hangar big enough, to put the airplane in. This is a very large airplane with a very tall tail. It won't fit in most normal hangars. And then, you know, you would have to do it, you know, this is the biggest sort of mystery in the world, right? So nobody who had any involvement would be able to leak the information. So the fact that we haven't heard anything makes it sort of unlikely that happened. But it's still, again, it's, you know, theoretically possible you could somewhere.
Well, given that you study cockpit information systems, wasn't there a case of an Egypt Air jet that it looks as though the captain decided to commit suicide with his crew and passengers? And there's some mystery over the TWA flight 880 as well.
There's very little mystery about TWA 800. That was clearly a center fuel tank explosion in Egypt Air. There was, it's pretty clear there was an intentional suicide. There was another case in Silk Air of an intentional suicide. So, there have been cases in the past where crews have intentionally committed suicide.
And we know that since the 9/11 hijackers, that they've improved cockpit door safety. But has there been any way since those incidents that you just mentioned, the Japanese and the Egypt Air incident, is there any way to avoid that possibility of a flight crew deciding to commit suicide with the plane and the passengers?
Well, you know, the other side of the coin, when you harden the cockpit and make it the cockpit secure, is that if the crew decides to do something irrational, you don't really have anything you can do externally to prevent them, right? So, the things that are done are sort of the normal things that are done in terms of medical screening and psychological screening and hiring and things like that. But, you know, there's always some chance that someone, you know, either has a mental issue or emotional or psychological issue and, you know, behaves irrationally. So, it's one of the risks we take in life.
So then, Dr. Arjan Hansman, in terms of, I mean, there's been obviously this incident has caused friction between the Chinese and the Malaysians, and I suppose there's no point in harping on the apparent ineptitude of some of the Malaysian politicians. But do you feel that time was lost that would have made a difference here?
Yeah, I think possible, particularly, you know, as time goes on, if the airplane is in the water, the wreckage will be more dispersed. If there was an oil slick, the oil slick would be more dispersed, so it makes it harder to locate it. So I think time was lost. And, you know, it's not unusual. Under international agreements, the country, when an airplane goes missing over international waters, the country of registration has the lead in the investigation, and other countries don't have authority unless they're asked to participate by that lead country. So I think for whatever reason, Malaysia was slow. I think they just didn't have much experience. And this is not unusual in events like this that happen in a small country that doesn't have a lot of events like this. They didn't have a professional investigation group there. They didn't have experience in how to handle, you know, the intense press scrutiny and all the information. It took them a while to get the right technical help to look at some of the data that was available. So it was slow getting going, and I do think some time on the search was lost. Obviously, they spent a lot of time looking in an area where right now it doesn't look like that's where the airplane was.
And in terms of not going to looking into the pilots and the co-pilots and the engineer, apparently, you know, they only just done that recently, and the pilot apparently had a simulator in his home. I don't imagine that's particularly peculiar, but anything that they could have gained earlier on that, I guess better late than never in terms of interviewing the families.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure how much that would have helped in refining the search location. And, you know, the criminal aspect of it, I'm not sure there's any, you know, what the urgency is. Again, on the search, really, if there were people there to try to, you know, help them, and then also to find the evidence before the evidence disperses.
Well, that was one of the scenarios that I discussed yesterday with David Glebe in the UK, was the criminal aspect of it, that that this was theft for ransom of the plane, and there, what, about $200 million? It was halfway through its life, so maybe it was worth $100 million, and it would be worth it for Malaysian Airways to quietly pay at least $50 million to get it back. But again, I guess...
Yeah, but the ransom thing, again, it's a little bit of a red herring. People, generally, the ransoms are not successful. You have to land the airplane somewhere. Once the airplane's on the ground, then you basically have a hostage standoff. You don't, there's nothing sort of unique about the situation. So it's not clear to me. I mean, and clearly we don't have a ransom situation, or we haven't heard about a ransom situation since, you know, nobody knows where the airplane is. So Malaysia Airlines clearly has not been contacted. So.
Well, I guess this is the agony for the next of kin, isn't it? They're holding out hope that these people are alive. And under what circumstances would there be a benefit to the criminals to keep these people alive unless they were ransoming back the passengers, perhaps, to the Chinese government?
But this is totally sort of speculation. I mean, I don't think we don't have any evidence of this. If the airplane was on the ground, I think we probably would have heard about it. I think it's more likely that the airplane is either in the water or has crashed, you know, on land somewhere, and can be very difficult to find.
And that's your conclusion then,
Well, I haven't seen any evidence that would. If it had landed, there's very few places it can land. Hmm. All of those places have been searched. So where is the airplane if it's sitting? You know. I mean, this is not an easy airplane to get under the ground. You can't just put it in any flat piece of land. You need a runway that can bear the weight of the airplane. I just don't see any evidence. People have looked that there's there's a 777 sitting in an airport somewhere that nobody knows where it came from. Yeah. You know?
Well, but just in closing, Dr. John Hansman, this leads you to wonder then, why would you go to all this trouble to hijack an aircraft and go through this elaborate maneuvers to avoid detection in order to just crash it into the ocean?
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, if we knew the answer to that, we'd know where the airplane is, right? So it could have been a plan gone bad. It could still be, it's not impossible that there was some sort of mechanical problem that incapacitated the crew and the airplane continued to fly on autopilot. The original turn was back towards an emergency diversion airport. So if there was some sort of progressive problem that caused them to turn back, so that's still, you know, in the list of, possibilities. And frankly, that's probably more credible than the airplane is sitting on, at some airport, with someone waiting to hold it for hostage. You know, if it was being held for hostage, I think we would have heard about it by now.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Dr. R. John Hansman.
Sure.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. R. John Hansman, who is a professor in the Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics at MIT, where he's head of the Humans and Automation Division. He's also director of the International Center for Air Transportation, and his current research interest focuses on advanced cockpit information systems, including flight management systems, air ground data links, electronic charting, advanced alert systems, and flight crew situational awareness. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with an active airline pilot about the disappearance of the Malaysia Airlines Boeing 777.